I know that they're keen to sort of move the conversation onto what to do, but in half an hour, is it worth just sort of 10, 20 seconds of introduction so that we know what people's names are and what their interest or connection to co-ops is? And then maybe we could have some of the time on clarifying anything that you would like to clarify.
Yeah.
And then maybe in the last 5-10 minutes we can begin to discuss what might be possible to do. So you know about me. So
my name's Scott Bailey. I'm the business owner in Sheffield, and we are looking at moving to a cooperative model and have been exploring the options.
Right.
I'm Jenny Patient. I'm part of a housing co-op. And got very excited about the credit union things and thinking about freeing up finance and finding new ways to finance things.
Steve Thompson, I'm a board member of the cooperative group Northern Region and director of Cooperative Yorkshire and Humber.
Chris, I work for a small web development and web hosting cooperative in Sheffield, and we host several of the other co-ops that are here today as well as lots of other things.
I'm also Chris, shiatsu therapist. I'm not a member of a co-op, but I was really interested in hearing about them, and I've always been interested in them.
Right.
I'm Peter, retired, free agent, member of the Cooperative Society.
I'm Peter, I'm active in Derby Climate Coalition, which is a group very similar to the Sheffield one, fairly similar.
Yeah.
And I'm also involved in something called the Jobs and Climate Alliance, which is being launched at the moment, so that's a national organisation.
I'm Kerry, I work for ReGather, I also work for Beanie's Whole Food Cooperative. And I'm writing my dissertation on how cooperative working might support sustainable food businesses. So obsessed with cooperative working.
I'm Lisa. I don't know. How do you follow all that? I'm interested in co-ops. I want to learn how to be in a co-op. Because I'm not sure that currently I'm in a position where I can. I don't know how to be a co-op.
I'm Stella. I'm the volunteer coordinator for the Hazelhurst co-op.
Oh, right.
I'm not sure what that involves. I'm not sure what being part of a co-op involves. So that's fine.
Right.
I'm Julian Briggs. I work at Stockholm Environment Institute in York on developing carbon footprinting.
I'm Adam Howard. Worked in social enterprise development for the Key Fund, which you mentioned, and more recently at Groundwork Sheffield. Now working freelance with a colleague on organisational development. What we really want to see is the social enterprise movement becoming far more ambitious and able to deliver.
I'm Joan Miller. I'm the chair of Hazelhurst CSA. But also the spokesperson for Sheffield Climate Alliance. So I've been part of taking the 10,000 climate jobs to the council. And they're very interested, but they need money, so actually sorting, helping them to work out how to get it in a different, completely different way would be my piece.
I'm Alice. I worked in a workers' cooperative in York. In the 80s, it was York Community Bookshop. At that time, there was lots and lots of cooperatives in York, Cycle Works, Jubigate Bakery, an organic nursery. Some of them have still survived. Some of them, unfortunately, like our bookshop, has gone the way of the world. When I first moved to Sheffield, I was part of a housing co-op, a women's housing co-op, called Women's Own Housing Co-op. That unfortunately went the way of the world and got the houses got taken over by a housing association because we had difficulty managing the housing co-op. So I'm very interested in the idea of cooperatives and cooperation. I know there are difficulties in going into the future, and I was particularly interested in your kind of sort of how things work and when they hit difficulties and how to get through it.
I'm Dawn Sanders. I'm going to be starting a business stroke social enterprise as an independent advocate. It's going to be an advocacy business. It's going to be multifaceted, advocating through various different vehicles for particular groups within marginalised communities. And I'm interested in several things I've mentioned then. Credit unions to start. I'm going to be meeting with some green incubator, etc. I just really need to get as much information as possible.
I'm Susan Danes, a member of the co-op. I'm really interested in cooperatives, I think really because of the opportunity it offers for personal relationships. I dislike hierarchies, and it really matters to me that people talk and share and argue and work things out. And I think unexpected things happen from things like that, and I think that ways forward, and I enjoy Occupy meetings for that very reason, and for the way they work, because it really is about talking and sharing, and ideas come from unexpected sources and come in unexpected ways, and I love that kind of living. And I think that it's far less risky than one can ever imagine. So that's the bit that fires me up, really. I mean, all the rest of it, sharing and equality and all those kind of things. But
right, I mean, what questions would you like clarified? It doesn't have to come from the session that we've had. And I'm not the only person who might respond as well. I'm sure there are other people here who can contribute. But has anybody got something that they would like clarified or to follow up from the session?
Well, you talked about building new productive relations, didn't you? That was one of the slides that stuck in my mind. And I'm interested in more of the thinking and the approach behind that. You know, what I understand you to be talking about is we need to start at the grassroots level rather than asking somebody else to do it.
I do. It's interesting. I mean, it's not. I don't think it's well known, but Sheffield has got a lot of very well established employee owned businesses. They're not pure co-ops in the way that a lot of people have become industrial and provident societies. But we've got School Trends, which is a clothes. They do clothes for schools, and Swan Morton is one of the world's great fine blade steel, you know, fine blade manufacturers. They're an industrial problem society owned by the workforce as well. Ripple is set up as a private company, but every member of the workforce holds shares in the company, and they're beginning to make a transition to one person, one vote in their governance with an elected employee board, and also setting up a charitable trust as well for the workforce to decide how they will distribute charitable resources into the community. And Forge Masters, I found, is quite got a large chunk of employee ownership, not majority employee owned. So these are all established local businesses that we can learn an alternative model. And of course, we've got a lot of smaller ones. We've got the Whole Food Courts. We've got all of the new community share issues going on as well. They're different in the sense that people have a much looser relationship into the cooperative, though, and there's the question of how you maintain democracy when people are not there on a daily basis, I think, is one of the big challenges.
That's cool. In relation to size quite a lot as well.
Yeah.
That, like, the cooperatives that I've been working with find that because they're small, staff fit around a table and have a discussion, and once they've got large enough that disappears and they start running into problems.
Mm-hmm. You could do, I think technology might help.
I was going to say something if it's okay about multi-stakeholder co-ops, which are a kind of a relatively new, I think, form of co-op that kind of are a mixture of the different three types of co-ops that were mentioned earlier. And Hazelhurst CSA is an example of that. The way Hazelhurst is structured, it's got three types of membership. It's got kind of consumer members, i.e. people that will eat the veg. It's got worker members, and it's got
investor members. Mm. And the way it's set up is that basically all of the decision making is made by the consumers and the workers. Mm. Investors don't actually get a say in the running of it, unless they're a consumer or a worker as well, in which case they're actually a consumer or a worker and they're not an investor. And as soon as it's got three or more employees, the employees get a 50% say in the running of it. At the moment, it hasn't got three or more employees, so it's still, you know, a consumer co-op. But as soon as it grows to a certain size where it's got at least three employees, this kind of thing in the rules kicks in, whereby it becomes a hybrid between a consumer co-op and a workers' co-op. So it's half run by the workers, half run by the consumers. And I think that's great, because it gets around the problem of, you know, you ending up with a whole load of well-off middle-class veg consumers in Sheffield who are paying people on minimum wage somewhere else to grow their veg or something like that. I'm not saying that's what would have happened to it, but it's got this kind of inbuilt thing that means that, you know, the workers will have a say. And it also means that it isn't just a kind of co-op that's just kind of dominated by the workers and the consumers don't have a say. And the set of rules that was set up under the Somerset co-op rules are incredibly flexible, and you can actually define almost as many different stakeholder groups as you want and have different ratios of who has a say and what, and they're incredibly flexible as to how you can set them up. So for example, my co-op, Web Architects, we're set up so it's the workers have a predominant say in it, but people that have their websites with us, or we host their websites, they also have a say in the organisation. And then people we buy services from, say the co-location facility in Sheffield where we've got a load of servers, they can also join our co-ops. The co-op it's bigger than a workers co-op, it's a stakeholders co-op.
It's all
yeah.
Free.
And I think that's a really interesting thing to explore for future co-ops. The other thing I'll be really interested in is doing some more, is if we can get some more ongoing kind of co-op stuff going in Sheffield. We recently noticed that the Sheffield.coop domain name, which was used by the department store, you know, Castle House, was available. So, we bought it and we're hoping to use it promote Sheffield's in co-ops.
Yeah.
Co-ops in Sheffield.
Yeah.
So we actually put in for a funding bid that we probably won't get, because hundreds of people put in for it, to get a little bit of funding to develop a website on that domain name. Mm-hmm. And we did a short two minute video just about kind of the new co-ops in Sheffield. It's very, very crude, very basic, but we had no money. We'd be interested in working with other people to try and do more stuff promoting co-ops in Sheffield.
Yes, that'd be good. I've got a list of Sheffield co-ops. Sorry, you were going to say. Then, do you want to go?
I don't know if I'll have a chance to step back later, so I want to step back now slightly, just to generalise a little bit about cooperatives. Firstly, there's a book that's come out. It's called Ours to Master and to Own, which is about 22 struggles of 22 countries with their struggles of workers one way or other trying to take control.
What was the name again?
It's Ours to Master and to Own.
Right.
And in that, it's got lots of stuff about cooperatives, but it sets them in the context of workers' struggle.
Yeah.
I wrote one of the chapters on that book on Portugal, and I was involved in Portugal, and I worked in cooperatives in Portugal at the time. In 74, 75, and 76. And one of the striking things about the cooperatives there, especially the one I worked on the land, they were created through the collapse of capital, the absentee landlords, you know, the peasants took over the land. Mm-hmm. And very often the cooperatives have been created in a very poor financial situation. Mm-hmm. A rescue job is the only way that the people could come together, which creates lots of problems. Mm-hmm. In looking at the history of the, they couldn't necessarily build where capitalism could sustain themselves. Obviously, in that particular thing, there were fantastic things in terms of social experiences, in terms of women taking over and running it. But there were other experiences. Another workplace in Lisbon I visited, they had meetings up till 2 o'clock in the morning, and they started work again at 6 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. And they broke themselves over that experience. So mm-hmm. fantastically dynamic, but also fantastically problematic. And one of the things about the workers' struggle is when the cooperatives taken over, we never saw them in the demonstrations. They never appeared. They became relatively inward. And what I'm absolutely obsessed by how we build movements, climate movements and stuff like that. And so you know, there is a tension there, a contradiction there.
The hybrids will help with that, sure, because you have to then talk to people outside of the workplace as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. No. Look. You know, I'm not saying it's not a. It's a under thought out. But there are issues, and I visited a construction firm, which, where they were very very militant. It was a large firm, and they took me into the boardroom and they showed me the drinks cabinet, and which they never touched and everything like that in the boardroom, and I said, why haven't you taken over? And he said, well, actually, we haven't got time to take over. We'd rather have the bosses under our control than to take over. So so I've just thrown you perhaps some disparate
There's a very good documentary called The Take, which is about Argentina's, what they call it, the recovered company movement, where there are sort of several hundred organisations that have taken over. But you do, there's a real struggle, sometimes 7-8 years, to get control of the enterprise. So you wanted to make a contribution. I thought you were trying to make a contribution earlier yourself.
No.
No? Oh, sorry. Okay. Yeah.
Just to emphasise what Rory said before about the Futures North conference. It doesn't say here that it's at Sheffield Hallam University.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. It's Sheffield Hallam.
And I'm on the board of Cooperative Yorkshire and Humber, which is the body. Which has as its membership cooperative organisations in the Yorkshire and Humber area. So, for instance, the three cooperatives who were Hazelhurst and Renewables and Regather and Portland Works and so many, you know, most of the others are our members. And I'm on the board of Co-op Yorkshire and Humber because the cooperative group who I'm a regional director of, sent me there as a delegate. The cooperative group spend a lot of resources and time and money on helping to establish and support cooperatives of every size and kind, provide, you know, which are, you know, follow the broad values and principles of the movement that have developed, as Rory said, since the 19th century to the modern day. So I have got a couple of booklets that illustrate the type of co-ops that have been held, you know, recently, and if anybody wants to look at those or borrow them or have them, that's fine.
Are there any other clarifications that people want to pick up?
Yeah. What's the difference between a co-op and a social enterprise? A kind of not-for-profit social enterprise? Is that what you were going to
ask? Well, more social enterprise as far as, I mean, I was just getting my head around what social enterprise
is. Yes, yeah, me too.
There's a lot of crossover because my experience of creating a social enterprise agency is formed out of a group of cooperative development agencies and a group of worker co-ops in London. But there are social enterprise agencies in other parts of the country which are much more come out of the voluntary sector. The difference, I would say, is whether you share cooperative values and principles, so whether you're organised in effect as an association with members, with elected governing bodies. These are the cooperative values and principles. Even if you're not registered as an IPS, you can still follow those values and principles. And in fact, Co-ops Yorkshire and Humber will accept any organisation into membership that subscribes to cooperative values and principles, even if you're not a legal co-op form. Social enterprises take a number of forms, one of which is co-ops, but it might be a private business with a social goal. If they can show that the money that they make is reinvested into their social purpose, they might get into membership. Might be a charity that does a lot of trading activity in support of its charitable aims. Social firms locally, we have a number. Those are often community interest companies rather than co-ops.
For example?
I'm a non-executive director of one called Viewpoint, which has an office in Sheffield, in Leeds, and we're opening one in Doncaster that employs partially sighted people. as well as people who are disabled. They run call centres, physically disabled, I mean. So they're in wheelchairs. Yeah, they're in wheelchairs. Sorry. So we're looking to extend ownership to them so that they can become a cooperative and run their own business. They voted to have an elected body, but they haven't voted to actually become members themselves yet.
Well, I'm installing barriers to bridges, which is going to be my social enterprise. I'm actually going to be looking for partners, a few of which potentially I mentioned today, really creating opportunities, say for example through what you just mentioned and Hazelhurst, that would be really advantageous for the three particular focus groups I'm going to be addressing, at least to start within the social enterprise, being people with additional needs primarily, and single parents, ethnic minorities as well, talking to some of the most marginalised communities, providing opportunities for them to get involved with something that's self-sustainable, something that's maybe an extension to, you know, the advocacy work I do or in partnership with. I'm talking probably down the line from when I first start, because when I first start, I'm going to be looking at getting my own work in terms of advocating and representing people. But this is all really good in terms of partnerships, I think.
It's kind of follow on from that. In the UK, there's no kind of, setting up a co-op initially can appear quite daunting if you look at all the kind of the setting it up legally and formally and, you know, all the steps you have to go through. But you can actually start smaller than that. To be kind of a co-op, just as has been said, you just need to kind of agree the seven international cooperative principles and call yourself a co-op. And then you're eligible to join Yorkshire and Humberside. You can have, for example, you can have a .coop domain name. They're quite expensive, but we can do very, very cheap subdomains. So you can have your co-op .sheffield.coop really cheaply. That's one of the reasons we registered it, of course. So like for, you know, a small voluntary group in Sheffield, you can be a unincorporated community, what's it from the, anyway, the lowest level of kind of legal entity that's actually really quite easy to set up. For example, the form that Transition Sheffield is.
Community association type thing.
Yeah. And, you know, agree the seven international cooperative principles, and then, you know, and then if at some point down the road you want to, you know, become an industrial providence society of whatever form or whatever, you can actually take that on further down the line. But you don't actually need to, you don't have, it can be very daunting if you think that the only way to do it is going through all...
It's not. I think, you know, a lot of the most successful co-ops I'm aware of started as campaigning groups, associations in the community. Coin Street Community Builders, which is quite a big community builder in London, started as a campaigning group against a particular private development, and then they managed to win control of the land and the property. And then they incorporated at that point. So after a
Can
couple of years of campaigning,
I have been community gardening for 6 years now. Been in Sheffield. I came to Sheffield as a student to do my degree in human biology. And what I found that to be the most serious obstacle to like thinking ahead is that I've had to leave my family behind to be here. And my parents are quite restricted in personal finance, and so staying in contact and keeping myself grounded can be quite difficult. Mm. That for me, that's my personal, that's my biggest obstacle to moving forwards. It's not being able to keep in contact with the reason that I'm trying to move forwards. I don't know if that falls under any umbrella as far as the cooperative goes, but it can be.
How many people here have access to social networking, or do you have a intrinsic
It's not the same as having lunch.
No, it's not. I know it's difficult. I mean, I get forced to use Skype quite a lot to talk to people abroad who I might work with, and it's nice to have a completely free well, it's not completely free because you need the equipment to do it in the first place, but if you can get access to that equipment, there are good ways of maintaining face-to-face communication with people at a distance.
I'm making a connection with what you said earlier about social capital as well, and about, you know, how important kind of like those networks are.
It's the reason that most people are doing it, because because they want to stay connected to the community and the people they love and stuff.
And I mean, what's been fantastic for me, I know back in about, I think it was 2008, we used to do this thing called climate action groups, and one of the things that came out of that was from people getting together and sharing their enthusiasm and getting to know each other. Was Sheffield Renewables, and the same way out of transition, Healy Mearsbrook, you know, the Hazelhurst co-op came out of it. So it's like if we start with where we are and actually the relationships and the networks we've got, and then actually, you know, find what our, you know, joy, passions are, like community gardening, you know, then we can actually have that support and you know, grow at the rate we can grow. I love Chris's idea there for sort of starting small and, you know, starting informal and then just build it up.
Just wanting to explore, you want to stay in Sheffield.
Yes.
And you want to be involved in something, the community growing. What tell us more about your community growing.
Whilst I was doing my degree, I spent my summers and, you know, any available time really at Leaf. I don't know if I've seen you there.
What's
Leaf? What does
Leaf
stand for?
It's kind of an allotment project, isn't it? And I don't know who it works with exactly. You'll know better than I do who it works with.
I don't remember what it stands for. I haven't been up there for a while. So
it's Diana Cocker.
Diane.
Heron's
Road, is it?
Yeah.
One of my students has gotten they've taken ownership of land which they're turning into allotments called Tim Jeffries. It's not the same.
No, it's quite a well established one. It's sort enabling people to get involved. Yeah.
So, are you saying there's a barrier to getting more involved in them?
No, it just doesn't. It's not the same as like if it was like a family. It's not a family thing. We're in the same community. But not the same as talking about. My mum lives in Cambridge.
Do you want to say? I would like to say something about how to create successful co-ops after this, which are based around family.
Well, there's just a point, and that is about the notion of a community, which is sort of traditionally a physical community, close by, and the extension of that to something which is much more widespread, and having kind of a virtual community, and how successful that can be expected to be as a replacement for, you know, the sort of the village.
You need to eat together.
Oh yeah. you must eat together.
Yes, breaking bread. Yeah, I think we're going to have to just saying something about the connection of family businesses to co-ops. There's an organisation in the UK called the Employee Ownership Association who have made a strategic decision that there's a logical connection between sort of family businesses or locally owned businesses where the family don't want to continue it, and in persuading them to move towards community ownership or employee ownership. So they don't look for startups, they look for families, they look for locally owned businesses that would like to sell out to the workforce or the community, and they help them through that process. The Co-ops UK and Bob Cannell, who is on the Co-op board, Co-op UK board, he said, you know, you'd only need a small percentage of that market to be doing it regularly, and within a generation you would see a complete transition of ownership into community and employee ownership. So and of course you're dealing with businesses that are viable, and you don't have the startup. So you need two strategies, I think, but
how you build communities. I want to know how you bring families back together after this.
Yes.
Going in different directions.
Mine is all over the world as well.
Actually, on that, I was really interested in what you were saying about Indonesia.
Yes.
I don't know whether you have any more information on that, because that sounds like a really good model.
It was, and they build those credit unions around families. It's interesting. There's an interesting organisation called the Grameen Bank, and I think they have much smaller groups of five people, where you can't have family members together. But the Indonesian model was much more based around family and friendship networks that already exist.
So family wasn't just family; it included friends.
Yes, it was a wider concept. You had to bring. You had to get the support of existing members to join a group, so that was where the trust came from. But they're still physical, they're still local to each other physically.
Mm-hmm.
The only solution I see to that is there are interesting online communities like Kiva. I don't know if anybody's come across Kiva. Again, I've shared some people's scepticism about how close you can get in an online community.
Mm-hmm.
But they do offer a way of to remain connected to people with whom you have grown up with.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, you maintain the trust using social networking sites that you have already established by being face to face with people, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore you can build on those community links in developing things. I think that's something that can be done more in advanced societies than where you've got real access issues to the internet.
Are you aware of something called Kickstart?
I've heard of it.
Only because someone sent me the link for it the other day and I've not read it yet, but I think they were explaining to me that it was a South Yorkshire version of Kiva.
Literally, it's a really localised version
of it.
Yeah.
How do you spell Kiva, sorry?
K-I-V-A, and it connects people to microcredit organisations all across the developing world. You can donate small amounts towards specific projects, and then you get your money back and you can put it somewhere else. So it's a bit like community share issue type thinking, where you keep moving your capital into projects to help them get going, and you get lots of people giving small amounts rather than one organisation giving a big amount.
A question I've got is what is happening in Sheffield? I mean, I know there's co-ops, Yorkshire and Humber. What's happening in Sheffield to link co-ops or to develop and help co-ops?
Regather, I think, has got a lot of potential. We do have the infrastructure body.
Mm.
There's a whole new conversation within Sheffield itself around how to support social entrepreneurship, because they've taken away the Sheffield Community Enterprise Development unit that used to be based at Mowbray Street.
Mm.
But there's a Sheffield network of social entrepreneurs, which has got about 80 members now. Its next meeting, I think it will be discussing whether it forms an association and tries to become the body that provides support within Sheffield. And they very definitely want to stay Sheffield based rather than South Yorkshire. Yeah.
Can I get information about that from you?
Yes, I can give you. I've got some cards if anybody needs one, and I can try to connect you to people that you need to connect to. Yeah.
Following on from what Jenny said, shall we set up a Sheffield Co-op's email list and pass a piece of paper around now to put their email addresses on it? I can set all that up.
There's a list. One of my students developed a list of Sheffield Co-ops. We have 50 on it. We could start with that and build on it. And I imagine Colts Yorkshire and Humber could provide information.
Well, there's an email address, a web address here that gives you the co-ops in the Yorkshire and Humber area.
Colts UK website.
Because things get out of date a bit, but it's there if you want to have
those. The really useful, Colts UK, if we could encourage all Sheffield-based co-ops to register their details on Colts UK's website, you can get a directory of all of the co-ops in a particular region as well. But yeah, I think it would be great to start that.
Okay. Yeah. Someone want to pass a piece of paper
around?
Rory, what was that organisation you mentioned that was moving family businesses to community?
Employee Ownership Association.
Employee
Ownership. I think they're based in London. But they've helped. I mean, they'll go anywhere to help. They used to look for businesses that had about 30, 40 staff and a track record of profitability, but they've relaxed a little bit more recently, I understand it. If startup work, though, I think come and talk to us at the university if you want to start something.
We've been talking as a colleague.
Or convert, yeah.
How many people have just run a very small business, maybe only two or three people involved in,
yes.
but are reaching retirement age?
Yes.
What happens to it?
Yes, I do. I don't see any reason why it couldn't work on a smaller scale. It's just that they're geared up. For larger immersions.
You know,
there are ways we could help you with from the university.